step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Pull me closer, again. How deep is your love?
We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. It's the Gary and Shannon Show. I'm Mo Kelly in for Gary and Shannon for the next hour. And then Wayne Resnick will take over at noon. For the past 5-6 months that I can think of off the top of the head, one of the main subjects that you've been discussing, I've been discussing, parents all around the state have been discussing, when are we going to get our kids back in school? Because the Zoom classes were just not working for anyone. And yes, it was suboptimal in nature, but it's the only thing that we had. And part of the reason why there was so much criticism, against Governor Gavin Newsom was that our children should have been back in school. That's what many people have said. We needed to get our kids back in school. Children, young people were less susceptible to the virus. So the argument went that, well, why don't we get them back in school? And now that there is the ability to get them back in school, they're not going for a number of reasons, and it's not exactly clear why. Only 7% of high school students have returned to campuses in Los Angeles Unified School District. And mind you, we've had extensive safety measures put in place regarding COVID-19 to make sure, as best we can, that not only students are comfortable, but teachers and administrators. And if you've been paying attention, you know that everyone, literally everyone, can get the vaccine now. There was a concern by some teachers, some members of the teachers' union, saying that teachers were reticent to return to the classroom because they weren't sure whether they could get vaccinated and did not want to return to a classroom unvaccinated. Well, that's not an issue anymore. And students still are not returning, not at least in the numbers that would have been hoped. In addition, attendance numbers for all grade levels in this, and remember, it's the second largest school district in the nation. But attendance numbers for all grades have been lower than expected. I seem to remember that we were so concerned about getting our kids back in school. We have to get our kids back in school. They're losing out on socialization. They're losing out in an academic sense. And now we have the chance to get our kids back in school, and they're not going back to school, which is really odd. About 30% of elementary school children have returned to class. 30%. It's less than 1 in 3. And 12% of middle school students. So either we really didn't care about getting our kids back in an in-person learning environment, or we didn't care. It's one or the other. Either we didn't care or we didn't care. Because if we actually cared, they would be back in school. It's one thing when we say that students don't want to go back to the class, and so there aren't the facilities available or the teachers available to provide in-person instruction. But that's not the issue. For whatever reasons, kids are not going. Is that a function of parents not wanting their kids to go back for only a week or 2 or 3 weeks? I'll listen to that argument. I would understand if a parent said, you know what, I'm not sending my kid back for 3 weeks. They're not going to learn anything else. There's also a hybrid model where they're offering online classes as well. What's the point of sending my child, be it middle school or high school, back to a learning environment in school where there aren't that many kids to begin with? They're not getting socialized in a way that we would hope, and they're not necessarily going to learn anything more in the final 3 weeks of the year because they're not extending the school year. They're ending it relatively on time. So there's really no point or function in an academic sense of sending kids back to class. That's the only explanation that I can think of. Because when you talk about 30% of elementary school children have returned, only 30%, and only 12% of middle school students, these are children. I would like to believe that the parents have some say in whether their children return to class. Some say, I just remember me. There was no way in the world. Well, it's a little bit different with me. My parents taught at the school that I went to, which really sucked.
So skipping was not an option.
It was not an option. And I had to explain it to my nephew some months ago. I said he didn't understand how much had changed, because when I went to school, if your parents did not teach at the school in which you went, there was a way possibly you could play hooky. Did you have it when you went to school? You had to bring like a readmittance note. If you were out for a day, you had to bring a note, which was a pass back to class. Well, for me, in my schools, you had to bring a readmittance note. Well, if your parents didn't work there, that was easy to forge.
Not that any of us did.
Right.
Nudge, nudge, wink, wink.
But there were holes and cracks in the system, put it that way, in which kids could maneuver around and they could play hooky and get away with it. I didn't have that option. And then technology came into play, where if you missed a class, there was an auto dialer which would call home and say your student was not in class today, so which made it even more difficult. So I don't even see how now students can get away with, and this is the point, students can't get away with playing hooky. So if they're not going to school right now, it has to be at the behest of their parents. They have to have some sort of endorsement from their parents for them not to go back to school. There's no way you're going to not go to school for 3 weeks and get away with it as a decision on your own as an adolescent, much less a middle school student. When I was in elementary school at Joseph Arnold Elementary, my father taught there. He was the band teacher. When I went to Cali Mayer Middle School in Torrance, 6th, 7th, and 8th grade, my father taught there. He taught band. When I went to South Torrance High School, my mother taught there. She taught choir, drill team, and English. So whenever there was an opportunity to find out about my grades, the status of my grades, or whether I was messing around in class, they just went down the hall and talked to my teacher. Sometimes when I was in the classroom, well, they would talk to my teachers in the teacher's room during lunch. There was no way that I could avoid it. And you can imagine in those circumstances, there was no opportunity for missing class 3 weeks in a row. I say all that to say, these numbers suggest to me that parents are the ones choosing not to send their children back. We can go back and forth as to the reasons or whether there are any merits to those reasons. But if 3 in 10 elementary school age kids are returning, that's a parental decision. If only 12% of middle school students are returning to class, that's a parental decision. High school, 7%, I don't know. That could go either way. Because, you know, if I'm a 10th or 11th grader and I walk out the door going to class, maybe my mom knows that I'm at class. Maybe she doesn't know. Because, you know, high schoolers have been known to do that. Did you have a senior ditch day?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, mine wasn't fun because what was I going to do? My mom taught there. I had no choice. I had to like go to class on senior ditch day.
I think I went to class until about noon and then we all headed out to the lake.
Yeah, I think I had, I think we left school early, but it wasn't a full ditch day for me. You know, my school was really different because my mom was always right there. And I think that's part of the reason why I rebelled in high school.
Probably. It's like being a pastor's kid, right?
Yeah. I think there's some, yeah, that's a great comparison. That's it. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I got it out of my system. And then by the time I went to college, I was better. 3,000 miles away from home.
Where no one can check
Nobody.
On me.
Nobody. And I'm quite sure that has something to do with it. This is the Gary and Shannon Show. Mo Kelly in for Gary and Shannon. KFI AM 640. It's the Gary and Shannon Show. Mo Kelly here, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Got this very insightful email from Dina regarding school and returning to school. She hit me at mo@themokellyshow.com. Dina says, "Hi, Mr. Kelly. As to talk about kids going back to school and why the return is so low, it's almost impossible for working parents to send their kids back in person because of the weird schedules. My daughter is ninth grade and her school goes 4 days a week from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. If I work 8 to 5, how do I get her there and pick her up? It's the schedules they are on that makes it very hard for working parents to make it happen. They can't be on campus early, and once it ends, they are to get off campus as soon as possible. It's so strange. With respect, that's from Dina." That's another aspect, I think, that what I didn't even think of, but I think it bears mentioning as far as what type of calculation parents have to make in terms of returning kids to school. And also, and we don't necessarily know the status of parents, whether they are out of work or whether they are trying to find work, or in the cases like Dina said, it's being able to have childcare available. There are a lot of variables in the equation. I personally thought it seemed like we were rushing to get kids back in school for political reasons, going back to the recall. And also we were trying to get them back in school to finish out a year, which really couldn't be saved in an academic sense. Getting them back in school for all of 3 or 4 weeks, I don't think benefits the child in the socialization sense. I don't think it benefits the child in an academic sense. And it's just a lost year academically. For me, I thought it would have made more sense to start in earnest in-person instruction in August or September, whenever the respective school terms should begin. And you have a full 3 months of preparation for not only the kids, but also the staff, teachers, administrators, and so forth. And everyone is clear on how it's supposed to work, if it's going to be completely normal, if it's going to be completely in-person instruction, or if it's going to be a hybrid. And also, there's adequate time for families to prepare accordingly, going back to Dina's note. That's what I thought would have been the best solution. But we tried to get kids back as early as possible, and there's nothing wrong with that, but we're seeing some of the unintended consequences of trying to do it. And just because, and I did say just because the schools are open does not mean that you would have the teachers there or you would have the students there. Something else, as I would say, is an unintended consequence or a function of how we were so focused on COVID for the past year or so, and rightfully so. It's something that we hadn't seen before. But here in California, we have problems which are specific to our state and our region. We all know that fires have decimated much of our state in a way which we had never seen before. As a matter of fact, and I didn't know this, well, I knew it on some level, but to see it in print just kind of reminds me how bad our fire season last year was. It was the worst fire season ever. More than 4 million acres burned. To quantify that is really hard to wrap my mind around. 4 million acres burned was 6 of the most destructive events in the state's history. And that's just in 1 year. And I can understand if you're saying, well, I was more focused on COVID. I was more focused on losing my job. I was more focused on pulling my kids out of school and what that was going to be like. I completely understand. I completely get it. And depending on where you lived, you may not have been as focused on the fires. But here's something else. Even though those fires may have been literally last year, some of them are still burning on a small level, depending on where you are. There are massive sequoias still smoldering following a fire in 2020. A bolt of lightning struck deep within the National Forest in August of 2020, igniting the Castle Fire, you may remember, and it spread into areas of the Giant Sequoia National Monument. That was August of 2020, and it's now May of 2021. And there are still trees still smoldering so many months later. What does all this mean? Well, given that we are now back officially into that drought, I discussed it with you when I was here sitting in for Gary and Shannon a couple of weeks ago. we had, unfortunately, a really terrible rain season. And let me digress for a second. When I woke up this morning, I looked outside. It was overcast, and I got into my car. I saw some sprinkles on my windshield. I was hoping against hope maybe we'd get just a little bit of rain. Maybe it was more than just a marine layer that was about to burn out. And I was looking outside not too long ago. I'm looking outside right now. It's still overcast, and I'm hoping that we might get some rain here in Southern California. And Amy King is going to be Debbie Downer. And she's shaking her head and saying, no, Mo, we're not getting a drop, are we?
No, it's just May Gray.
but it was, they were like sprinkles on my windshield. It was water condensation.
I know. I'd like a good dousing too.
But I say that to say, we're probably not going to get that rain. And state officials have warned, even since last week, which was Fire Preparedness Week, that California's 2021 wildfire season could be extreme. And they're saying, let's put it in context, they're saying it could be extreme on the heels of 2020, which I just told you, when we had six of the most destructive events in the state's history. They're saying after 2020, it could be extreme. Quote, like Armageddon. I don't know what could be worse than 2020 in terms of the fire season that we had. But state officials are warning, yeah, it could get worse. Why? Because we've had a longer, drier season than normal. So we'll have actually a longer, potentially fire season than normal. In other words, if last year was bad, look out, this year could be worse due to the drought. And maybe we were focused on it last year because of COVID, and I would say rightfully so. You know, you can only possibly focus on one statewide emergency at a time. And since we had not dealt with a pandemic within our lifetimes, but we had dealt with fires, then I could see how emotionally we'd not be as focused on the fires. But now, coming out of the pandemic, we can really see what we might be looking at in the summer months. And hopefully it will not be as bad as 2020. And hopefully we are individually and collectively as a state prepared for the wildfires, which will come at some point, but hopefully will not be as destructive and disastrous as 2020. This is the Gary and Shannon Show. Mo Kelly here, KFI AM 640. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
You know it's fine. I go, oh, hey, maybe there isn't a ride.
Kelly here, KFI AM 640. It's the Gary and Shannon Show. We're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. Anaheim grocery, retail, and drugstore workers could earn an additional $3 to $5 an hour just for working during the pandemic. And right now, the city council in Anaheim is discussing requiring some businesses to offer a hazard wage increase, or hero pay, it's been dubbed. Here's the interesting part of it all. Anaheim is on the outside of this, as several Orange County cities, including Irvine, Santa Ana, Costa Mesa, and Buena Park, have already approved this hero pay, which is about effective for about 4 months. Anaheim, which is the most populated city in the county, has yet to do so. And joining me now to give us an update on what's going on with the city council and this issue is KFI's own Corbin Carson. Corbin, how you doing, sir?
I am doing good. How are you, sir?
I'm doing real well. I wonder, though, whether this issue is going to pass the Anaheim City Council and what type of headwinds are against it.
Well, look, I've talked to both the pros and cons here. The Anaheim City Council is expected to speak or discuss these issues on Tuesday's meeting. That would be tomorrow at around 5 p.m. They're going to go over all the cities that are nearby that you mentioned that already have hazard or hero pay ordinance is in the works. So Santa Ana, Costa Mesa, Buena Park here in Orange County, but also L.A., you know, you have Oakland. In all, about 25, 30 cities in California have adopted this. And, of course, there have been lawsuits from the California Grocers Union that have tried to prevent this in several different cities. And so far, they have withstood those kind of legal efforts so far. They haven't all played out just yet. But so I spoke with Anaheim City Councilman Jose Moreno. He is the one that is kind of proposing, at least discussing this, hearing from all the different sides. He says he's hearing from the community that, you know, these are grocery workers that, you know, laid down their lives, as it were, you know, risking health when everything else was shut down. Here's him explaining why he thinks this is at least something the council should discuss.
These are folks who were on the front lines during a pandemic of the past 14 months that presented themselves during a time of panic and rush by many of us who didn't think we'd have toilet paper and water and other groceries when we thought this was the end game, the end of days. And they were up there on the front lines. They had very little protection, very little PPE, they weren't plexiglass, and they were struggling with their employers to get protections. Stock shares increased by over 30%. Billions of dollars in profits. And so it's only fair that that they also share in some of those rewards.
And that's been, again, some of the same arguments we've heard from the pro side of why this should be something that should be considered. It's not something that the grocery stores can't afford, according to the proponents of this. But then there's the other side of people that, you know, there have been several stores that have closed, underperforming stores that have closed in response to this. At least that's what the California Grocers Association says, that it's going to end up costing families more, somewhere in the hundreds of dollars, according to their studies, for groceries each year. And then I tracked down Councilman Trevor O'Neill, who is the Anaheim City Councilman that is currently opposing this. Again, they're just discussing, so they haven't made up their mind. They both want to stress that they're not for or against anything until the vote or all the information is in. But Councilman Trevor O'Neill says, look, this is just not government's role.
The economic shutdown has cost Anaheim tens of thousands of jobs, and we're just now starting to rebuild with the reopening of the resort in Disneyland. This kind of wage mandate would only serve to raise prices on hardworking families at a time when they can least afford it and expose the city to unnecessary liability. In my opinion, the real heroes of the pandemic are the frontline healthcare workers who treated those infected with the virus and the community volunteers who staffed Anaheim's testing and vaccination sites.
And then that's the argument right there for you.
Do we know, at least on a labor level, as the grocery workers are unionized, if I'm not mistaken, whether they have taken any particular public stance? In other words, if the hero pay is not approved, have they said how they might react one way or the other?
You're talking about in Anaheim? No.
Yes,
I mean,
yes.
Usually the unions have been obviously very in support of this. They have argued that, you know, courts have repeatedly rejected, regarding minimum wage hikes, how is this any different than a limited hero pay, that, you know, that this is not unconstitutional, that, you know, these are workers that are taking these heavy risks while everything else has been open. And that's usually what you see, is you see the protests outside from unions saying that these are workers deserving of this type of hero pay wage. Now, as again, we've seen this play out in court, and a couple of months ago, the California Grocers Association took this for a preliminary injunction. That lost. That does not mean that there are still several legal steps to take, but one of the reasons that it was being litigated in court was that they said that this is unconstitutional. This prevents collective bargaining. That this gives cities the whim to increase or decrease wages whenever they want to. It does not actually help protect the workers during the pandemic. This is the California Grocers' response on that. And then the city's responses that has been the response, at least in this last litigation, was the extra risk is worth $4, $3, or $5 an hour. Grocers still have the economic power to bargain. And, any kind of continuance of this ordinance would just require more legislative moves. That this doesn't have anything to do with the courts. So, and then I do also want to add that Anaheim in particular is saying that this is not about mom and pop stores. This is only for the big chains that, again, Councilman Moreno says can certainly afford this kind of bump. Everybody started depending on grocery stores and using them primarily. So that's where he says their sales have gone up. And many other cities have said that as well.
The city council is saying that they're going to take up discussion of this starting tomorrow, as in Tuesday. Mm-hmm. Do we have a sense of how long they're going to allow this discussion to last before they come to a final decision or vote?
That is an excellent question, because I have covered many of these city meetings, and they can go on for hours. If you're talking about within the day, if you're talking about within weeks to months as to when they will approve this, then I can imagine that there will be, again, proponents that come up there as they are unionized, and families of grocery workers that will come in support. And then at the same time, sometimes you have the opposite side saying, hey, look, this is not government's role to just give people money just because they think they should have it.
So it will be an open session where people from the community representing these different grocery stores or workers will be able to offer an argument on behalf or against.
That will be usually how this plays out. I imagine that will be people that will be allowed the one or 2 minutes to speak on for or against these grocery three to five bucks an hour as to whether or not they should get it. Again, this is an argument that has played out several times. It will eventually come down to how the split is on the council as to whether or not they agree to make this happen, and then it'll be up to the California Grocers Association to see if they're going to file yet another lawsuit against the city. Then of course the city is going to have to deal with. And as you heard the Councilman O'Neill say, that's just an extra expense right there that's going to cost the city as far as litigation is concerned.
Corbin Carson, always appreciate you keeping us up to date on these important issues.
Much appreciated, sir. Have a great day.
This is the Gary and Shannon Show. Let's talk horse racing and cheaters when we come back. KFI AM 640, Mr. Mo Kelly here. And for Gary and Shannon, we're live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app. At the top of the hour, Wayne Resnick will be taking over for me to take you the rest of the way through Gary and Shannon. But before I go, I want to talk a little bit of sports with you. My first job in radio was working with Jim Rome, Hall of Fame broadcaster, sports radio, revolutionized sports radio. And I was one of his producers. This is maybe, a good 20 years ago or so. And part of the job was booking certain guests, getting them on the line. One guest, which I frequently had a chance to speak to briefly, but in the course of doing business, was Bob Baffert, the Hall of Fame horse trainer. And Bob is a legend, an absolute legend in the realm of horse racing. The Kentucky Derby scandal, as it's unfolding, is important on a number of levels. One, it has to do with the legacy of Bob Baffert. Specifically, the horse, Medina Spirit, is Hall of Fame trainer Bob Baffert's fifth horse known to have failed a drug test in just over a year. One time, could have been a mistake. Two times, bad luck. Three times, four times, five times. After a while, you have to start looking at the trainer, Bob Baffert. And without going into all the history, he was vindicated on other occasions as far as being accused of horse doping. But here's the reality that most people don't want to talk about with sports. Because there is so much money in horse racing or baseball or basketball or football, there is going to be cheating of some sort. And it varies. It could be cheating in the form of, like baseball, stealing signs. It could be cheating in the form of steroids as far as personal performance. It could be cheating in any number of ways. And horse racing is no different in that regard, because there's so much money and prestige involved with it. Everyone's looking for a competitive edge. There have been all sorts of cheating scandals over the years as far as jockeys, any type of weight shenanigans as far as how much weight a horse would carry, all sorts of things. This is just the latest iteration of trainers trying to get an advantage. Now, it may not necessarily be that this horse and Bob Baffert were trying to cheat. It's also well known that other trainers cheat to get other trainers in trouble, where you would spike the food or spike the hay of a horse so they would test positive. That has been known to happen, and that's a possibility here. I'm not saying that Bob Baffert is the one who is responsible for his horse testing positive for the substance. From all accounts, doesn't give his horse a competitive advantage, but the rules are the rules. I don't know whether he did it, but I do know that there are enough questionable instances in his training history which calls into question whether he might have had something to do with it. You know, if you rob a bank three or four times and then the bank ends up being robbed a fifth time, it's okay to look at the bank robber in the room and say, hey, did you have something to do with it? You are a bank robber. So it's not unfair to Bob Baffert to look at him and say, Bob, this is another one of your horses. Bob, another one of your horses, which is tested positive. Bob, this is another one of your horses, which is tested positive. And oh, by the way, just won the Kentucky Derby. Where it gets really complicated is the Preakness is this Saturday. And if you know the Triple Crown, it's the second race of the three races in the Triple Crown. And if this holds up, Bob Baffert's horse will not be allowed to compete. That goes back to the money. That goes back to the prestige. There's a lot riding on this, and I'm not sure how they can sort all this out before Saturday, whether they'll have an official ruling, whether they'll have an official ruling and appeal before Saturday. Bob Baffert is definitely going to be appealing this. You might have heard Fred Rogan on with Gary and Shannon earlier today when Gary and Shannon were in for Bill Handel. Fred Rogan is going to be speaking to Bob Baffert today on our partner station, AM 570. And I'm quite sure Bob is going to answer a lot of those questions. He's made it very clear that he's claiming complete innocence, that he had nothing to do with this. He doesn't know about this. He doesn't understand how it happened. And in short, he feels he's been set up or the test has been doctored in some way. I don't know that. All I know is that Bob Baffert approaches this situation with unclean hands. And I've been going to the horse races since I was a child. My father would take me often to Santa Anita and also Hollywood Park when Hollywood Park was still around. So I have a lot of love for horse racing. I still think that it is a sport with a shelf life, which is getting ready to expire. I don't know how much longer into the 21st century we will have horse racing. I think it has outlived its popularity in most quadrants of this country. I think we're a different country now, and horse racing is going to decline in popularity, I believe, in the next 10 years in a significant way. But that's a different discussion for a different day. But I do believe that it's fair to say where there's smoke, there might be fire, if only because there's been a lot of smoke around Bob Baffert in just the last year. And I'm not even talking about the totality of his career. He is a Hall of Fame trainer. He has earned that, and that can't be taken away. How he will be remembered ultimately, the jury's still out on that. And I think it's fair for the jury to still be out. I think it's fair to question whether Bob Baffert is telling the truth in this regard, given his history. But it's not outside the realm of possibility that his horse was set up in some way. Because when I say cheating is going on in all of these sports, that includes cheating to harm your opponent, not just cheating to help yourself. This is an important story because if there's an analog to this, I would say it would be cycling. And we remember with Lance Armstrong and how blood doping forever changed that sport. And we saw with steroids and performance-enhancing drugs how that impacted baseball. And back in the 1970s and early 80s, how steroids harmed and changed professional football. I think this is one of those moments in sports. And now horse racing will have to go through it where there'll be heightened scrutiny as far as what horses are or are not doing, trainers are doing or trying to do to get a competitive edge. There's so much money and prestige on the line with these horse races. We know people are cheating. It's just a matter of how they are cheating and how often they're getting away with it. Coming up next is Wayne Resnick, and he'll take over the rest of the way. This is the Gary and Shannon Show. I'm Mo Kelly in for Gary and Shannon. I'm going to be with you the rest of the week. We're going to have some fun. We're going to talk about all things serious and silly. Check me out at my personal website, MrMoKelly.com. KFI AM 640. We are live everywhere on the iHeartRadio app.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.